Renegade Broadcasting, hard-hitting talk radio. Welcome to the Renegade Roundtable. This is your host for tonight, this Saturday night, Kyle Hunt, coming to you from RenegadeBroadcasting.com. I hope everything is coming through loud and clear and there are no audio issues. I stayed up late after the show last night to ensure that we had solved all the problems here, and supposedly we have, and hopefully they don't crop back up tonight. Great, it looks like we are being heard, and we are being heard well. This is a roundtable, and that means I will be speaking to other people about the important issues facing us here today, and trying to put together some kind of plan of action for setting things straight. I already have a few people here with me tonight. First, I will jump on over to Andrew, the Veganator. He was taking place in the USS Liberty activism somewhat near me in Florida just a few days ago for the 50th anniversary. We were handing out literature, getting people to sign a petition to make June 8th USS Liberty Remembrance Day, and we had a pretty good success rate. We got a lot of people to sign those petitions, and were able to deliver some uncomfortable truths about Israel and our politicians. You know what, though? A lot of people seemed pretty receptive to what we were putting out there. Now, Andrew is quite good at doing this kind of work, so hopefully we'll be able to work with him again in the near future, because this guy, if we just had 14 more of him, we'd be really getting somewhere pretty quickly. Really, we need people with dedication, with some testicular fortitude, with some outgoing personality traits to really get this to the next level. I'm having a hard time unmuting him here. I'm going to reload the studio.
No, I got it. I just muted myself.
Okay. Well, hey, welcome.
Hey, what's going on, Kyle? For some reason, it's Mike. It's echoing.
Echoing. That's no good. Yeah. Maybe try to turn your speaker down.
Sure, I can do that.
Yeah, that will help, and it should settle.
Actually, I'll put in headphones.
Okay.
Yes. I'll be back in a minute.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to bring on Leifkin here. Leifkin, welcome to the show. Glad to have you here.
How are you doing, Kyle? Excellent effort last night. And everybody got it raw. I mean, you weren't muted, so we definitely could hear how frustrating it was for you.
I wish I had a camera here so I could have live streamed what my facial reactions were as well. Just pulling.
I got a little worried for Renegade's future at a at a certain point because you stopped cursing, and all of a sudden I heard things banging around. I thought, oh no.
Yeah, it could have just been some exaggerated noises here. I wasn't really trashing the place.
I'm not
that hasty. But it does look like we have a pretty good setup here tonight, moving forward. And it sounds like Andrew is back.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes. Are you hearing an echo?
Nope. Perfect.
All right. Very good.
Well, so, with the activism stuff, you just have to pretty much like what I was telling Sinead, your wife, is that you just got to let your feelings go and just go with it. Because like with what we know, it's a righteous and moral cause, and everything is stacked on our side to where the truth is on our side. We have all the facts, all the reality of what really goes on. And when you start cutting through that bullshit that they spew out, you just shut them down, and people like are receptive to it because they understand something's wrong with society. And like, especially like the people that were giving us attention, like even the ones that were like slowly passing by, you know, they'll be like, no, I don't want to sign it. But then when you tell them, okay, fine, you don't want to sign it, well, here, take this pamphlet, learn about this day. And when you learn about this, pass on to somebody else. And I tell them like what you should do. Like, oh, if you find this interesting, just hand it off to somebody and say, hey, did you hear about this? This is pretty interesting stuff. And let them read it and then pass it on. Because people, like what I learned in doing sales and stuff is that you shouldn't take no for an answer, especially when you're confident and you know about the information and material. Like people will always reject you because they don't want to be bothered. But it's like you got to stick to them like a parasite and tell them, look, this is what you need to know. This is important history. Learn about history. And then, you know, they'll take upon that appreciation and be like, okay, fine, I'll take it. And even if they don't read it, they'll throw it away or throw it on the ground or maybe leave it in an office. Well, somebody else might pick it up and get interested and read it. Because, like, you were there that one time when that one guy was, like, hauling ass to the courtroom or whatever he was doing. And he's, like, pretty much, like, F off. Don't bother me. And I was, like, okay, fine. And then when he came back out, I followed him. And, you know, I was, like, hey, sir, here, just read this. And, you know, I took it. He was all angry and stuff. But you never know. He might have took that home, laid it on his counter, and maybe later on he read about it. And he was, like, wow. This is interesting stuff. Like you can't always take no for an answer, because like even when you awake people up to the Jewish influence and power behind things, at first, as you like we all know, they're gonna deny, then they're gonna, you know, fight it, and then they'll come to terms with it after, you know, people just keep hammering it to them because they've been brainwashed, they've been filled with propaganda about, you know, the Holocaust, all these events, or better yet, not even told about it, like this USS Liberty. Like, I never heard about this. I didn't know about this stuff until, like, you know, you told me about this activism. And I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to go do it. Like, it's better for me to be there as, like, I can make every excuse that day and be like, well, I don't know about this. I'm not confident. I'm not going to show up. You guys have fun. But I came up there, first of all, to give moral support and to show you that, hey, you know, there's somebody out there that will help you out, benefit you. And even if I don't know it, it's just to show up, to show you that, hey, I'm here to help out by any way possible is a big, big thank you and big motivational, like, support. Because, like, a lot of people don't understand this, too. Like, even if people won't give donations or money to you, just showing that appreciation, like a nice comment, like, hey, I really appreciate this video. I'm going to share this with others. That is, like, a huge, like, it, like when I hear those type of comments and those type of, like, you know, comments that people give me, I feel fulfilled. Like, even though, you know, money would be nicer, but that comment hits home and it keeps me motivated, keep going more and more. And even like with this whole activism thing, it's just, you gotta let go of your feelings. You just can't worry about what others think about you. Like, cause that's the biggest thing. That's the problem with people is they're afraid to get out there, put their face out there, say something in the public. Like we were talking about this, like, for example, a lot of people, even if they were across state doing activism out in the public and they'll never see these people ever again, they still won't say anything or do anything. They'd just rather just be quiet, be hidden in the shadows.
And like for me, it's like I don't give a fuck. Like if I'm gonna be like what I'm gonna be doing tomorrow, I'm gonna be going out in public doing something I'm gonna be putting on YouTube. I don't wanna give it away, but you already know what I'm gonna do. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Andrew, before we get much further, I just did wanna see if we could correct the microphone issue. It seems like you're having are you sure you selected the microphone when you went to the settings? You could go down to the bottom of the web page there and click on the headset icon and make sure that you're running your mic audio through, I think you're using a Snowball and not through your internal mic, because I think that's what might be taking place here. So if you could have a look at that.
Yeah, I'll fix, I'll work on that.
Oh. Yeah, it's coming through like, it's not that good. We heard everything you said, but it could definitely be better. And I'd like to try to get it the best it could be. And if that's not the case, maybe you could just try reconnecting in. Leifkin, have you done any activism yourself?
Yes. You know, it's interesting. First, I'd like to mention the USS Liberty, because I didn't learn about that when I woke up initially. I mean, I woke up to a lot of historical things before. You know, it's like I worked my way up to the modern day. I don't know. I was always a person into history. So I kind of started far back and worked my way towards I knew about international Jewry and all these things before I learned about the USS Liberty. And, you know, I did a lot of social networking stuff. I posted every video I could of the survivors and just about anything. And an interesting thing happened. I tried to tag all these people you know, I tried to get to look at stuff from Renegade and other places, just kind of wake people up, that were supposedly patriots and a lot of veterans and some people that I know. And the interesting thing was, out of the dozen or so veterans that I know personally that I tagged on a Facebook post about the USS Liberty, only two of them liked it, two Navy veterans, and nobody reposted or anything. And I found that interesting, that on other things they will, but it's like the USS Liberty is like this thing that they cannot touch. And even veterans themselves will not touch or even talk about. I found that interesting. But, you know, it's funny. I'm 37, so back in the 90s, I'd grab a poster, take it up, you know, to the capital of your county or the capital of the state, and you walk around and, you know, some people honk at you and things. There were no way to post it to let people know back then. So it was kind of a one-man gang for a long time, and I even did it, you know, I really wasn't using a cell phone and things like that. I lived in the forest. I managed a company, so I had to start using a cell phone at that point. So that's when I got into the cell phone thing, but I never got on social media. So, you know, I would go around and I would pass out pamphlets, and one of my favorite things to do would be to make flyers and cut the bottoms, you know, and post websites on them, and I would post, you know, where they could find information or a book title. And I just did that for so many different things. And I would post them places, and sometimes I'd come back and, you know, I'd see three of those things missing. And I always thought, well, nobody threw it away, so these are three people that grabbed them that wanted to hear, you know, was interested in what the flyer said. And I used to have group meetings at our local library because they're public. The best thing to do is to take the flyers off of the public library site, because if you do it at the library, when they find out what you're going to be talking about, they kind of change their mind about, you know, free to the public to use their spaces. But I've gotten groups of 15 people in a library to talk face-to-face about certain things. Some people just show up to kind of, I guess, in a very real way, troll you. I've had people years ago show up from the Tea Party movement, and you know, they were basically just Republican Party stooges that came to, you know, disrupt things. And
hey, Nathan, I'd like to ask, how did you first find out about Renegade Broadcasting? Did somebody direct you here, or did you just stumble upon this?
Okay, well, actually, I got reconnected through James from Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
Me and him became friends, and I got reacquainted, but how I became acquainted was when you guys first started, Sinead and Lana did a show. It was a pagan-oriented show.
That was a couple of years in, at least. That we started in 2012 at Renegade. But yeah, that was maybe at the end of 2014 or early 2015.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, I had listened to some of the earlier shows, but I didn't get to listening consistently until that show. And there was another show that I can't remember the name of. There was two pagan-oriented shows a couple years ago that I started listening to on a weekly basis. And then, for one reason or another, it fell out.
I was just asking because I think it is very important to have online outreach to be able to connect with all of these people that are hooked up to these social networks. I don't advocate people going out and using Facebook. I still use Twitter, but everybody is pretty much online, and we can reap great results, rewards from doing what we do online. But I just think that there's something very, very important about getting out there in the streets. It doesn't mean marching. It doesn't mean getting in fistfights, but getting out there and engaging with the public, especially at the local level. Andrew, I think the audio problem might have been on my end, so I apologize for that. It does seem to be rectified now. What do you think about this? Obviously, we have a huge part of our energy dedicated towards online outreach, but do you consider getting out there in person to be very important as well?
I think it depends on the situation. Is my mic better? Or can you hear me?
Much better.
Okay, perfect. I think it depends on the situation. Like, for example, everybody has a part to play. Like, I've seen a poll on your website, you know, get out there, do activism, do online activism, make a movie, make a YouTube video, tweet about it, comment on Facebook, because you want to reach as many people as possible. And there's different audiences all over the place. Like, I use different, I don't just use YouTube. I use YouTube. I use Facebook Live. I just add people on Facebook, random people, because you never know. And it's just like, well, maybe they'll come across your content and they'll click. And then I use Tumblr, Twitter, what else? Reddit, and even other websites. Just everything. Just, like, you know, spray around. And then, yes, it's important to do public activism in your local area, like, depending on the situation, because to have people, like, in front of politicians, governors, or, you know, in your city politicians, it's a statement, because they'd rather have you online expressing your anger and frustration because they could just, you know, they just ignore it. You know what I mean? But when you're in their face, and you're showing them that you're angry, you're upset, you're going to their meetings, their town halls, and you protest, you do all that stuff, and you show them that you're really angry and upset and you're not going to allow this change, that puts something in their mind like, maybe I shouldn't do this. Maybe I should think this over, hold back. Because it all depends on the situation. Like, even doing the activism we did, those people, like those government people that we were talking to, I highly doubt it. They're really going on YouTube or they're probably on Facebook, but they're just within their own group, their clique. And like, for example, we reached people that would not be aware of any of this stuff because one, they're older. They're not really in tune with YouTube, Facebook as much as like we are, Reddit, all these other information. So you have to reach certain audiences. And for example, those government people, you start reaching those people in those positions of power, they could really make change. And because a lot of them, they are upset, but they are brainwashed in this Jew tricks also, because, you know, they've been all the propaganda brainwashed or barely not even mentioning about it. They just sweep it under the rug. So I think it all depends on the situation, but I do like more public activism Because the thing is this, is that people are scared, afraid to do it. But after you get over that scaredness, it actually becomes fun, entertaining, because then you could try to outdo each other. Like me and Sinead were doing that a lot, just trying to outdo each other. Like, oh, this person's going to run away. Well, watch this. I'm going to still track them down and, you know, give them the pamphlet and take, and I will not take no for an answer. At least take this and like shove it in their face. Hey, you know, and it gets funny because they all try to outrun you and stuff and ignore you, but you're sitting there like, hey, hey, I know you're there. Look at me. Pay attention. And it's really, just.
She's really good with it as well. You two are definitely good on the boots on the ground type of activists. And she's been doing this for years as well. I've gone out there solo many times, holding up signs, even back, what, maybe 2011, 2010. I've been, you know, holding up signs about chemtrails, all these different issues, and trying to tie it all together as well, a checklist of all the ways we're being screwed. And I think if you do get somebody into a conversation, you have to start leading it in that direction about the corruption in government. And so easy to point out with USS Liberty, and also about how our greatest ally really isn't our greatest ally. I think that people really do need to get over their fears, as you were saying. I think it's very important. I think our rulers would love to have us basically in our own little online ghetto, gab.ai, because we've been censored from everywhere else. So we just give up. We go there and we vent our frustration instead of actually getting out there and reaching people. And hopefully with the censorship that is going on online, people will realize, hey, well, if they're going to close down my outlet there, well, I very well better find a new one. And there are plenty of things that you can do with some pieces of paper, with some with a car to drive around in, with just some creativity, really. You can unleash your creativity and just thinking, how can I reach as many people as possible? You can put on a dramatic performance. You can, come on, look at what the left has done over all these years. Make some kind of scene. You could do something big and reach a lot of people. And I think that there's also something to be said for not just that kind of solo lone wolf going out there and, you know, putting out tons of pamphlets and flyering like crazy. That's great. And I think that we need more of that. People should not have to just wait for other people to lead the way, to print up the material for them. You've got to take the initiative, go do it yourself. It doesn't even matter if you have anybody around you. But I think we should never underestimate the importance of getting out there and meeting up with fellow like-minded people. This is great for morale, and it makes it all just so much more real. And I think that this is something that will definitely yield long-lasting results, especially because when you meet somebody in person, you're able to much better judge them than if it's just an online friend who's hiding behind an alias, is using an avatar, and you really don't know who they are. You're not going to form the same kind of lasting bond with that person than with a guy you've been out in the streets with facing down an enemy. So, or reaching out to other people. So with all of this in mind, I want to segue to another topic somewhat related. I would like to talk about the anti-Sharia protests going on. But before I do that, we could do that maybe in the next half hour and just comment upon that whole dialectic that's being played and just how mind-boggling it all is. But let's first throw it back to Liefkin to talk about the importance of real-world activism and any other issues related to this, because it's such an important topic that we should never forget just how we all need to get out there and do more, and how actually it's oftentimes very gratifying on a deep level.
Well, you know, one thing I'd like to mention, I don't want to open this can of worms, but when you're the lone wolf, when you're the only person out there doing it, there is a danger factor to it. If you want to make a scene, a great way would be to go to colleges right now with all the issues with the evergreen college out west that had the day without white people and all that. And you have that Elliot girl being praised for her the greatest experiment of all time, the green eye, brown eye experiment. And, you know, all these things that go on in colleges, you know, it would be a great place to stir up real trouble if that's what you were looking to do. But I think the best way is on a local level. Keep it on a local level at first, and that's how you really build rapport with people. Like, you guys were doing a unique thing with the USS Liberty, but when you're doing, you know, I live 25 minutes from my nearest town, and that town has about 35,000 people in it. But one bit of activism you can do there on a local level that you can make a change is, like, say, here in this town here, we had an issue with the capital city in our state was giving vouchers to minorities in these drug neighborhoods to move to metropolitan housing out in the Appalachian Forest. Real culture clash there. And then they come down and they bring their drugs and everything. And people are upset about it, but they don't want to say anything, you know? So that's something that we touch on down here is making sure that, you know, we keep it something that's going to concern them. These are your neighbors. Now all of a sudden, you know, your small school doesn't have two minorities in it. It has 14, and then the next year it has 21, and pretty soon it's getting out of hand, and that's the sort of thing they see it. They know it's in their face. That's something that they can grasp a lot better than some of these issues that we're completely awake to.
Slippery slope, indeed. It is a mudslide. And wow, how appropriate that term is with a recent video that Andrew the Veganator put out about how Denver, in order to better accommodate the illegal invasion, is decriminalizing defecating in public. Whoa, that slippery slope has definitely become a mudslide. Absolutely disgusting. A race to the bottom. La Raza to the bottom. Well, we have a break here, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with much more. Coming to you every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. I deal with topics related to our past, present, and most importantly, our future. The show has a lot to offer. Occult knowledge, insightful interviews, hard-hitting analysis, and essential inspiration. I know we are living in a world filled with darkness, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel. We have the power to take back control of our world and reclaim our destiny. But we're running out of time. We need all hands on deck. Will you do your part? Join the struggle and fight for our freedom.
Come from the land of the ice, of the snow, from the midnight sun, when the autumn glow. The hammer of the gods will drive our ship.
welcome back. We are talking about real world activism. I think it's just so very important. You can prove a lot to yourself. I was very much interested. I was kind of surprised by how I felt when I was in DC protesting in front of AIPAC, when I had the left-wing Jews, a huge crowd of them who hate me. They knew what I was. They didn't know who I was necessarily, but these guys hated me. So did the JDL, who was opposing the left-wing Jews, the right-wing Jews and the left-wing Jews. I was absolutely surrounded, yet I was bullhorning them, had very little backup. We did have John Smith there attending, filming things, but I was at one point almost surrounded by them. I didn't allow my six to be compromised, but this is a group of Jewish terrorists who firebombed Ernst Zundel's house, murdered quite a few people, was considered by the FBI to be a terrorist group. But you know what? I didn't feel real fear in my heart, and I stood my ground. And that, I think, is something that people need to experience. It's not getting out there and charging at an enemy on the battlefield, but it is similar. You're really on a battlefield when you're going up against Jewish terrorist groups. But it feels good to also sometimes be that David versus the Goliath, to use their little Jewish giant slaying story. But in any event, we'll get back to Andrew and then
Kyle.
Yeah,
I was wondering if I could add something about your experience from my point of view.
Sure.
You know, when I was out there doing it all on my own in the early 2000s with the 9/11 dancing Israeli stuff and stuff like that, I really felt like that scene in Braveheart where, you know, he gets betrayed on the battlefield and he's wounded and he's there like, I can't believe this. Here I am fighting for this. And everybody around me is against me, really, you know, sort of thing. And when I seen the videos of you and they were going around social media, there was a lot of people, and I don't know if they're renegade listeners or if they're not, but some of them knew who you were. And they were all, you know, Kyle Hunt, look at him out there. Nobody came to with him because he's such a loser. He's this and he's that. And I did hear a lot of that. And I was appalled. I felt like these people who didn't do anything but get in their basement, turn on their computer, and they're saying this online, you know, it's a totally different feeling when you're out there by yourself than when you're out there with 30, 50, you know, 100. The more people there are, the more safety there is. When you're like that, you're like the gladiator in the arena with lions around you. And it's a very different feeling, and that's what I seen. When I seen the signs and when I watched the videos of you, some of your early protest where, you know, you're like, I think there's one where you're sitting in a chair or something and you got a sign, and you're walking down the street with a giant sign there. I've seen a few of them, and, you know, it always sort of reminds me of me, of what happens when I go out and do it. So, you know, I definitely think that unless people do it, they don't understand. And, you know, it's a certain thing inside a person's heart that makes them go and do that. Most people wouldn't. And like the Viganator was saying, he was talking about how people really are afraid to say things and afraid to do things. And sometimes it takes 10, 12, 15 people for that 16th person to say, okay, I got enough in my heart and soul and enough guts to do this now. But when it's one person or two people or three people, it's a whole different story. And I have so much respect for you and what you do.
Well, thanks. I didn't stick around as long as I planned because I felt if I didn't have any backup, I had already painted a very big target on my back that first day there. And I didn't think there was going to be much more I could do on a second day. And I was like, I'm getting the hell out of this cesspit. But I was pleased to at least accomplish that. I just was, I had to lament how no one else came out, but how we needed for any event out there. This is the one that needs to be protest en masse. That whole giant complex should have been surrounded by angry Americans of all different stripes. But you'll see some protests with Bilderberg. You'll see some people protesting against Sharia law. Okay, that's real logical here in America, protesting against Sharia law. If you were going to organize a protest against Noahide law, then maybe I would be, I'd be out there with you. But we have just this awful situation where everybody's energy and anger is being directed anywhere but where it should be, right on the enemy. Not all the proxies who are out dancing around trying to goad you into going and rushing at them. No, to the general back there behind the lines. We need to get to him. We need to fire a big arrow way over all these people to get to the person who is directing all of the forces maneuvering against us. Let's go back to Andrew. We'll bring on another caller, and I definitely want to talk about the anti-Sharia protests that are taking place. I don't even know too much about them, but I could definitely comment on them. Andrew, anything you'd like to add about what we were talking about, being a gladiator out there and how a lot of people won't join in until some kind of critical mass is reached, and then it could just snowball from there?
Yeah, next year, count me in, because I would have came if I had extra time. I think like when I found out about it, it was like the day before or when you were driving up there. I was like, crap. But if I had extra time or, you know, known about it, like at least 2 days in advance, I would have been there right with you. But I think we should maybe do this. Start looking into when the next APAC will be at or what day in that, and just start putting it out there early. Hey, let's start organizing, save the date. Let's all meet up there and go there. I think, yeah, I'm looking at the website right now. It says March 6, 2018. Or no, March 20. No, that's last year's.
We'll figure it out. It'll come up soon enough, but there will be plenty of things, I think, to organize people around.
Because, yeah, I think we should start bombarding people with this. Like, hey, let's meet up there. Let's start organizing a protest. Give them like months in advance so that they can have like literally no bullshit excuse. It's like the way to weed out the real people from the fakes, because that's the one thing I cannot stand. And I try to organize a lot of people in my area that are aware of the Jewish agenda, the problems, and they always talk tough like, yeah, I'll go out there and organize and do things with you. Like I always talk about, like, if you don't want to get out there in public, let's do midnight activism. Like, post flyers all across the town at night when nobody's there. Like, nobody will see you. And it's a way to coast them into doing activism, because it gets you, you know, you got to do small steps, because most people are afraid to get themselves out there publicly, put their opinions, because the whole, you know, agenda, the political correctness. But it's a stepping stone. All these people will back out with the most lamest excuses, like, oh, I got to do cardio in the morning. Oh, I can't do it this today. I got to go watch them. Like, stupid stuff, stupid excuses that make no sense. And it's to the point where, like, for example, strength is in numbers. Like, when you have people around you helping you out, it's motivating. You feel good and it's exciting. And like, even when there comes like these people out there that are doing this anti-Sharia protests and stuff, they want to fight. They want to do these battles, but they're being misguided and distracted from the root cause. But when the people really want to do like something that's not, and I like to call these sanctioned battles, because that's what they are. The media propagates it as if, you know, you goyim are actually fighting for your liberty, your freedom. Meanwhile, like what you're saying, you got to go after the general, or better yet, think about it this way. Look at the person who's opening the gate, allowing these never-ending flow of these biological weapons of mass destruction. the way that we are fighting this is we're fighting the biological weapons of mass destruction. And it's a never-ending flow. If you really want to stop this, you destroy the gatekeeper, you close the gate, and then you clean out the rest. But the way they're doing it is, I don't even see that gatekeeper. Ignore that person. Let's just focus on what's in our face instead of, you know, taking a step back, looking at the bigger picture, thinking about this, like even this Sharia thing. Who is empowering and pushing this Sharia across our nation? Is it really Muslims that are doing it? No. Like even in Europe, is it really Muslims that are pushing the Sharia upon them? Well, now they are because the group of people that put them in their home in Europe also empowered them while disenfranchising the natives. Like, it's mind-blowing, but people just focus on what's in their face because they want to be told what to do, what's the problem, and who has the control over the major news outlets. Even though they know it's fake news, they still fall for the lies, the narratives. And, like, like for me, I like to say this. We need to become radicalized. And to me, like, I'm at that point where it's like I'm radicalized. I'm pretty much ready to do whatever it takes. And whatever I can do, I will do it. Like, AIPAC.
If there was a Waffen SS, I'd sign up.
Yeah. I'm not even joking. Like, when I told you, like, at the AIPAC thing, if it gets fist fighting, I'll join in the fist fight. Just, you know what I mean? It just shows – like even that showing that, hey, these white guys are fist fighting us, they'll be like, whoa, that's something that they never done before. Because like what you're saying, you were solo, but if there was like 10 guys fist fighting out there, even though I don't want to get into a fist fight, but you know, if it escalates to that point, it's a statement to them. They're like, wow, this has never happened. They're really getting pissed and they're actually trying to do something compared to these.
They got their asses beat.
Oh yeah, like that fucking make them change.
Running down the street, running away from a bunch of pissed off, angry Americans, being called out for being the alien subversives that they are, but for being the criminal terrorist organization that they are. If they had their tails tucked between their legs, yeah, that'd be a great sign.
Because the other thing too is, it's like you could actually, like, the people want to get into fist fights and fight the real enemies. It's like at AIPAC, you are literally right there. You can literally put your hands on them. And you know what I mean?
I'm not advocating people going and assaulting people at AIPAC. But
no, I know. But I mean, it's like,
defend yourself against the Jewish terrorist league. But yes, you're right. You're actually in proximity to the people who are actually calling the shots as to what your country is going to be doing, not only with foreign policy, but also domestically. But people are just going to be concerned about MAGA marching instead. That's what they're doing at that same time. Leifkin, I want to go back to you to get your thoughts on the anti-Sharia protests and all of the other things we've seen with the deplorables and the demonstrations for free speech and against free speech and for Milo's free speech and for Trump and against Trump and all this crap.
Well, mine's going to be simple, and it'll probably, again, it might open up something that we don't want to talk about. But white Sharia, to me, is just Abrahamic faith, poisoning the movement. Some people have were former Jew slaves, and then maybe they became atheists, maybe they became pagan. But a lot of these are coming from Christian identity people. And, you know, Islam and Christianity have a lot in common. I mean, they're pretty much the same. They were created by the same tribe. And what they do is they're played off of each other to trigger each other. So this white Sharia thing may be a counter to the Sharia law saying, hey, we should do this. And to me, what this is showing me, and this is my opinion, that as this refugee problem starts going on and on, the monuments getting taken down, being white not being allowed on this day or that day or in this building or that building, what it's doing is it's inflaming the Christians, these Abrahamics, and what they're doing is they're starting to revert back to Old Testament. And pretty soon they're just going to start acting just as barbaric as Islam, because that's what Christianity is. The only reason why they're not out there doing that now is because they soaked up some European culture during their mini crusades against the white lands, and they became European in a sense, not their religion, but the people. And a lot of the Christians were European. So, of course, it's like one foot in one place, one foot in the other. But Christianity is designed to separate you from your family, to make you fight with your wife, with your children, you know, to not bring peace but the sword. And the Bible teaches that you cannot be white and Christian. You know, there are no Greeks, there are no Jews. You know, you're all one in Christ. And that is the secret weapon of the Jew. And all they're doing is pushing the right buttons. And this is the lash. This is what we're seeing. Well, we've got to get more Abrahamic than our Abrahamic enemies.
Right.
And, you know, it's set up for this giant Jew-slave war where, you know, you pick one side or the other. And you get to be either the loser or the world's greatest Jew slaves. And what are you going to get out of that? And my, you know, a side issue for me as a pagan, as a person of Native European faith, I often see a lot of people on the fence or even suggesting that we can somehow use Christianity or use these Christards for anything. But from a religious standpoint, what happens when you become the world's greatest Jew slaves and then all there is pagans and Christians? I wonder what the Christians are going to do, because they were never a wall against Islam in Europe. All they did was kill each other and rape and murder each other and took over each other's churches and destroyed white culture. And you're seeing white Sharia as more of that. It's whites destroying white culture in the name of an Abrahamic God. And I guess that's as simple as I could put it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'd say I'd agree with the gist of that. It's definitely a Christian reaction to the problem, and I've noticed throughout the past few years how easily herded a lot of the Christians are in the movement. And I think it's that they're programmed to respond to certain shepherding tactics. I mean, they're supposed to be the lamb, you know, talking about the Lamb of God and Jesus, the Good Shepherd. And it's really a sheeple type programming that they get. And they're also always looking for that savior. And before Trump came along, it was Putin. And after Trump, perhaps it will be somebody else.
I'm wondering if I could just add one more part to that. Universalism within Christianity, and that's where you're getting this alt-right, alt-light stuff from, these guys like Milo and Enoch and Reactionary Jew and Richard Spencer. They're the knee-jerk reaction, the pull for these Abrahamics. And, you know, gays are Abrahamics, even though the Abrahamic teaching is against them, and minorities and things. And they can just pull them all together because they can say, yes, we're all on the right, and we're all united. We're one people. This cross-dressing African-American here and this transgender Asian here and you know, Milo and his 7-year-old buddy that he thinks, you know, is his boyfriend or whatever. These type of people can all get together and kumbaya, perhaps, you know, have a pool party at the bushes. I'm sure Richard Spencer could pull it. You know, that's the sort of thing that they do. The universalism part of the Abrahamic faith really just sways these people. Like you said, they're so easily corralled. But you got to remember, they accepted the parts of the Bible that they were read. So how intelligent can they be?
It goes really hand in hand with accepting an authoritarian type of rule, more centralization, imbuing the leaders with godlike status, the god emperor. And it really just seems to be a system of control that is utilized by this corrupt state time and again in order to control and cull the populations. And that's what we're seeing with this Christian versus Islam dialectic that's being played out only on kind of the nationalist level, to be honest, because the general Christian church is pushing this from top to bottom. The Pope is flooding Europe. I mean, or is he's not necessarily the one doing it, but he is all for the flooding of Europe with hordes and hordes of Muslim young men. And the churches themselves are harboring them. Here in the U.S., they're saying we'll be sanctuaries. Essentially, they're admitting that they're going to be part of a human smuggling operation. So this kind of rift between the Christians and the Muslims, it's only a very small percentage of Christians and Muslims who are actually kind of fighting this out. For the most part, it seems like we're seeing a unification coming about of the Abrahamics, the Abrahamic slaves. Chrislam, as it's been deemed before. That is pretty much, I think, kind of like the Borg takeover that's going on here, as Abrahamic faiths really dominate right now and are trying to cement their control. You look at Trump and his big push for unity while he was over there in the Middle East. He's talking about the main religions. Of course, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. I don't know why Judaism is always put up there as one of the main religions when it's such a small percentage of the whole population. But, well, we know because it's the source of all of the control system of the whole world right now. It's not just the white world, because look at all of the Christians who are not white. It's amazing, amazing to see how their memes infected the entire world. Now, I know Andrew might take a slightly different opinion on these topics. He was a Jehovah's Witness before, and I think he sees the divisions between Christians and pagans as perhaps being something that our enemy exploits in order to make our struggle less effective. And I'll tell you what, I've thought that sometimes myself and tried to work with some Christians. I've just had very, very bad experiences and have noticed some of these different peculiarities about them and their savior complex and how easily they're controlled. So I have somewhat given up on that for the time being. And you look at what it says in their good book. It does say to kill all of the heathens, and just take their women and children, or kill them all too, and then their cattle. Basically, it's not good. Regardless of what passage you're looking at and the details, it's not good. So I would be very concerned if we did have some kind of final victory of the white race over our enemies, even if it was to take out completely the Jewish power. And we had these white Sharia guys, the ones who jockeyed in somehow and got control. I'd probably take my suicide pill.
That's exactly how I feel. I second that completely. Every encounter that I've had with trying to work with Christians, and as the years went by, I had less and less ability to put up with it. My skin just couldn't take it after a while.
There's an acronym that Urban Jungle Girl brought up earlier. CRAP. CRAP. Christian Right-Wing American Patriot. I think we kind of all know the type. And they don't do a whole lot for this country. And in fact, they just kind of fall into Zog's hands every single time. Okay, Andrew, your thoughts. We've got 3 minutes before the next break.
I'll make it quick, because this is how I operate on this level with religion. First off, I don't talk about religion. I tell people, forget about the religion aspect. Put race first, and then you could put your religion in place, because people, when they go Christianity, they're cucked. They just, oh, we got to help out everybody, turn the cheek to the enemy and all this, you know, crazy nonsense, you know, type of mindset. While everybody else in their religion, their ideology is conquer, destroy, lie. But for us, it's turn the cheek, compassion, do more to help out them, your neighbor, the different person. And I really cannot stand religion. And that's why, like, I don't look into it. I don't talk about it because it's just another way of divide and conquer. And that's what they use, because you see it all the time here, like in like different factions of Christianity. And like, I'm not really that.
That's the worst. The different factions, they seem to hate each other, even within Christian identity. Some of these groups seem to hate each other more than they'll hate somebody like me. Oh, they definitely hate me. But you look at just the history of Christianity, and let's just say, pick one example, the 30 Years' War in Germany. Just different sects who believe almost exactly the same thing, 99%. But that little difference is going to be the cause of the depopulation of some of Germany's finest stock.
Yep. And then the other thing, too, is that they get into this mentality where they got to outdo each other. Do more. Oh, you got black children. Well, I'm going to take two black children and I'm going to do this. It's just like utter madness. It's just pathetic. And that's why I like to tell people, race first. Like, seriously, you could do all that stuff, but help your race first. Put that bullshit aside, because no other race out there helps a different race on the level that we do. And you see what's going on, to the point where we are dispossessing ourselves and pretty much genociding ourselves. Because it's all at the expense of us. Like, when we become a minority, when we become, well, we are already disenfranchised, and I think we are already a minority in our homelands, but they're not going to help us out. They're not going to do more to help us. No, we're going to be a disenfranchised, hated minority. And people don't see that. Like, they just think that, oh, you just need to do more. Show them loving, comparing, compassionate. And that they'll reciprocate that. It's like, no, people don't have empathy and that altruistic mindset that we have because of evolution, of going through the Ice Age, working together as a collective group of people to help each other out. Other races, no, it's conquer, destroy, violence. You got...
All right, fellow Floridian, we've got a Gator song here, and then we've got a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Rushkoff, why Jews are dangerous.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right. In that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real. And that's very upsetting to people.
We're all the time. Oh, come on. Renegade Broadcasting, hard-hitting talk radio.
Welcome back. This is the second hour of the Renegade Roundtable. This is Kyle Hunt coming to you, and I have Andrew and Leifkin on the line with me. For the break, we're talking about religion. And one of the things that I think is important to note is just where the locus of control is in a religious mind as compared to an awakened mind. Now, the people of the alt-right, they really believe that, some of them legitimately believe that this ancient frog deity, Keck, was blessing them, that they would praise Keck. Some of them, it was just a joke religion. But honestly, for some of these people, they really believe this. This ancient deity of chaos was the one who was granting their wish of installing the Zog Emperor. And I have a lot to say about this particular topic. I might get into a little bit more tomorrow about Roy Cohn and his green frogs and the gay frogs. I'm going to be speaking with Nick Spiro tomorrow night, and we might cover a little bit of this. But I just wanted to point out that half of the chaos symbol was seen at the anti-Sharia protest in New York City. And it's the Metropolitan Anarchist Coordinating Council of New York City. I saw this symbol out there, and I said, I recognized it immediately. It's the bottom half of it is the Chaos Cross. If you've ever seen Trad Youth, which is run by Matt Heimbach, he uses the top half of the Chaos Cross there. So the leftist anarchist group, who for some reason is siding with Sharia in the U.S. What? These degenerates out there protesting for Sharia? That's why it's just so mind-boggling seeing everything that is unfolding here. But you start to really see the game being played when you combine, you know, the right wing, which is facing up Chaos Cross, with the left wing facing down Chaos Cross. What do you get when you have this dialectic, come together in conflict like this? You get the synthesis. You get the solution. And that is the solution that our enemies are looking for. And they're using chaos to do it. That is what is going on. And you need to look into why Alexander Dugin, this great beloved intellectual of the right and the alt-right in particular, uses the Chaos Cross. So people, please do look into that. And as I said, we might talk about this a little bit more tomorrow. But I'd like to throw it back to either of the gentlemen who are on the call with me to see if they'd like to add anything about how people with the religious mindset, they put the locus of control outside of themselves, and they are at the whims of this force that is controlling them, rather than putting that locus of control within themselves and saying, I am the one who is steering this ship. I am the captain of my destiny, and I will do what it takes to see this journey through. I am the one making the decisions here. I am in the captain's chair.
I could put that into a perspective. You can go, Leafkin.
Are you sure? I mean, it doesn't really matter. I guess that's basically what I was saying, is that when these people become Christians, or especially the ones that are born Christian, they give that driver's seat away, and they become a passenger, perhaps even in the rear of the vehicle. And that's what's so dangerous. And, you know, that's one place where I disagree with people. And, you know, Veganator's great. You know, I've enjoyed him on here. You know, so I don't want to make him think like I'm calling him out. But when he made his last statement about talking about race first, but that's exactly what I think is happening here, is when you have a religion that says you don't have a race, that you are this first, you are not the driver. You are in the back seat. I think that is the dangerous thing. When you're talking about race, to me, I use a term called true white. Are you white by faith and by blood? And maybe, you know, I'm not saying atheists aren't worthy or anything like that. What I'm saying is the people who aren't, who have a religion, and that religion is not a white religion, then how can you trust them, especially when that religion says that you cannot be white and be X religion? And I think that that causes them, like I said, to revert back to the Old Testament ways as things get riled up here, because they're in defense of their religion first, not their faith, their folk, not their blood. And sure, it seems like that at first, and that's the way they always are. But to tell you the truth, you know, it's flag, it's government flag and God all the way. And I think that's the real issue with Christianity, and you know, in my opinion.
Okay, well, we'll throw it over to Andrew, see what he has to say about this.
Yeah, I'm always open to criticism. I don't, you know, if you're going to challenge me, it's like I take, you know, I like it because then it corrects me and then I can move on and use that correction to carry forward. But to go on with what you were talking about, Kyle, putting higher faith into somebody else and letting them dictate the narrative is exactly what Jews want you to do. Believe that a higher faith is going to take care of it, but that higher faith that's going to take care of it is the Jews that are actively putting in the work to fulfill their agenda. While, like what Leafkin said, you take a passenger seat and just let faith and the higher being take a hold and dictate the narrative, when this narrative is a genocidal agenda. Like, you have to get, like, I tell people this all the time. You have to put in the work to get what you want. Like, for example, you go to school, you put all the time and effort to study. It's not like you just sit by and say, you know what, God's going to make me pass this exam, or God's going to do this for me to get me through school. No, you took the time to sign up for the class, to go to the class, to learn the material, study, take the test. It's the same thing. If you want to make changes in society, you have to put in the work, the effort to make those changes. You can't sit back and, like what I like to say, pass the buck to somebody else. You got to do it yourself. Organize, rally others to join your side, to put in that work also. And it's like, that's the thing. Like, you can't believe in a righteous and moral leader is going to come and save you. That's not going to happen.
It's God, Jesus, Trump. They all fulfilled the same purpose. And it's all about just wait and see. Well, think about how paralyzed a lot of these Christians are out there, who think that the end of the world is coming and they don't need to do anything to really prepare themselves other than, or battle or anything other than just prepare their souls, because they'll be raptured. Now, the Mormons aren't really that way. They're actually literally preparing with stockpiles. So they've taken it in a very different way. There's a lot that could be said about Mormons, but that's on the direction I'd like to go. But this idea of the political figure being this kind of substitute for a God, where people put their faith in him, and even if they don't really believe in them, they think that somehow, you know, maybe they'll come through in the end. know, maybe I'll finally see Jesus, or I'll finally, you know, get to feel that divine inspiration of Yahweh, or finally maybe Trump will come through and fulfill one or two of his promises, maybe, please. You know, and actually, there are figures out there such as Andre Anglin putting forth the idea that what Trump really needs to do, what the Zog Emperor really needs to do, is declare martial law. And that will be the way to clean things out, to give even more power and authority to a corrupt entity. That's what they want to do with politics, and that's what they want to do with religion. And I'm just saying, they're pretty much interchangeable. They're part of the same system of control.
Well, the American flag, you can add that to the list, too. People worship that flag, and no matter what is done in its name, that is the right thing to do. It's just like Christians do not question God. These patriotic Americans do not question the flag.
We have another caller here from Virginia. Hello, who's this?
Oy vey and shalom.
Uh-oh. Well,
who are we talking to?
It's Nick from Virginia Beach, dude.
All right, Nick from Virginia Beach. You've been waiting around. I thought it was potentially somebody else, actually. But what do you have to add?
I quit eating meat.
Can you speak up just a little bit? You're a little bit quiet for us.
All right. I quit eating meat. I listened to your juicing show about a month and a half ago. I like literally just cold turkeyed it. And I'm like dropping weight. I'm like literally 20 pounds lighter. And
how do you feel?
Literally, like, I don't get bummed out. Like, I used to be like, oh, you know, moping around and sad, but it's like, I don't, like, when I like kind of like think that way, and I'm like, no, like, I'm good. Like, I don't know. It's like, I think there's like a, I've been listening to a lot of Charlie Giuliani shows, archives at work, and the whole parasite thing, you know, it all kind of makes sense. It's like a whole 360-degree attack, you know, every angle. It's ridiculous.
I definitely had a political, spiritual awakening myself. Coincided with me giving up meat, and at that time I was just vegetarian, but I definitely felt something come over me, and I was just so committed to making the world a better place. I think that there's something to this idea of turning yourself from a graveyard into a living thing once again, to come back alive and stop being a zombie feasting on dead flesh. Now, some people hate that I even bring up veganism here, but well, we do have the Veganator on with us, so it is a pertinent topic. He and I were talking over some vegan neighbors. We got some tacos, vegan tacos, at this place in the town where we were doing activism. Yes, I had a vegan neighbor with the Veganator, and he was telling me that he also really couldn't stand the injustice anymore. It really got to him even further when he switched over to a plant-based diet. So you want to add anything about this?
Yeah, like what he mentioned earlier with the plant-based, you know, going vegan. Like for me, I noticed that I first gained some weight because I carved up, because, you know, I followed the typical bodybuilding diet: high protein, low carbohydrate, medium fat. And like, you know, you're always hungry, you're always starving, you want to binge because, you know, you're not eating carbohydrates to fuel yourself because your body runs on glucose. And like when you go vegan, like I went cold turkey also, because I was just committed. I'm like, I'm going to do this. Let's do it. And when I did it, it was the best thing ever. Like, I swear, like, your mind becomes so much clearer. You feel so much more energetic. And, like, you get more, like, wild up. Like, you get more energy. You feel like you have more testosterone. You're stronger in the gym. And it also, like, you get more angry, like things that get you upset. It's like you got this rage, like because you're not doped up. I like to say this because you're not doped up on the drugs, the poisons, the toxins that's within meat. Because I used to eat a lot of meat, and you know the meat's fed. They're fed GMO crops, antibiotics, sexual hormones. They're
of soy. You know,
yeah,
a lot of these meat eaters are always talking about soy. You're going to get all that estrogen. Well, that's phytoestrogen. And hey, you know what? It's being fed to almost all of those animals that you're eating. Now, meat itself has tons of estrogen in it, as well as dairy. All the dairy products, lots and lots of estrogen. And, when vegans have something like soy, if they want to, that's just phytoestrogen. It's plant estrogen, which is not nearly as disruptive as the animal estrogen. And in many instances, it's been found to actually be protective of women, stopping them from getting breast cancer and certain other things. So that's a whole nother topic. But I do think that there is very much a strategic advantage to getting our people switched over to a plant-based diet. They'll be able to live longer in the struggle. They'll be able to look much better. We won't have some people out there like the Matt Heimbox. Look at Andrew or myself. He's in better shape than me, but neither of us look like a sweaty Matt Heimbach out there on the streets. That's important. It really is. So you have to really think about these things and consider what you're going to do with it. Let's go back to Virginia caller. What was your name again? This is
Nick.
All right. Nick, what else would you like to add about that or any of these subjects we're talking about here tonight in terms of activism?
I tell like my roommates and people at work and stuff, I kind of try and tell them, I feel like, you got to worry, fix yourself up first. And then once people see that you're not, you know, a fat slob out of nowhere and you're taking care of yourself and you have pride and like the way, like I just have like better posture now and I just can feel like energy emanating from me. I don't know. You just got to like work on yourself first and then people will be like, yeah, this guy's not a fat slob. Maybe there's something to this. And then you can, it's just, there's so many people at so many different levels of like where they're at. There's, you know, the total cups. Then there's like my boss, my old boss from my work, I ran into him today and we were talking and brought something up and we just went on a like 20-minute rampage of, you know, how they're taking down statues and how this and that and, you know, or, I mean, Confederate monuments and everything. And I don't know. I live in Virginia Beach and we have a beach week every year. It's a weekend in April where we get flooded with 50,000 grenades from colleges and they literally just come destroy our beach and wreck shop. It's ridiculous. And, you know, then all these people, everybody wants to cancel it. All the business owners, nobody wants to have it. And then you have all these idiots like, that's racist. And it's like, how can you defend these people that literally come destroy, like the beaches are like economy, like everything is the beach.
Have you ever looked into what happens in Myrtle Beach with Black Bike Week or Black Biker Week? They have to, it's basically like they're preparing for a hurricane. Yeah, a lot of businesses do want to close down. I don't know if they're forced to stay open now, but it was really like a hurricane was coming through. I was down there the week before it, and they were all telling me about it.
A war zone. Biological weapons of mass destruction.
Literally boarded up the patio, everything. Boarded everything up. It's crazy. And that's racist. Can't, you know, let them destroy your beach. Because I used to drive taxi, and we rode around at the end of the night. And, yeah, the trash cans were empty, but everywhere around the trap was trash. It's like they don't have – it's like they're animals. Like, I don't know. It's ridiculous. It's crazy.
But, you know, and white people are actually emulating this behavior. They don't do it to this level. It's just not in their nature. But I've seen a lot of white trash, literally trashing the place. And I hate it. Oh, man. I hate seeing all the obesity. I hate seeing all the disease. We could so easily fix it. So easily.
Like nature, like you're talking about Christianity. Like when I used to go to church a little bit or whatever, and it just all seemed like Disney to me. Like it just didn't, like, I'm like, this is dumb. And then I would like go outside and I would be in the woods and I would like, I don't know, just like have like a sense of like spirit. I don't, like, you know, just like you go in the woods and you just like feel this relief and it's like, oh, like I could never experience that in a church.
Oh yeah, I agree completely. The sunshine coming down, the green world surrounding you, reaching up from the brown of the dirt, to the brown of the trunks, and flowering forth in the more evolved life forms out there, all breathing with you. It's definitely a real, literal, spiritual experience, because spirit actually just means breath. And that's where you connect with the animal world, with the world of the plants and the fungus and the bacteria too. I mean, we're just so far out of our natural state, and it's killing people literally. We haven't heard from Leafkin in a little while. Leafkin, anything you'd like to jump in on?
Well, you know, I feel exactly the same way about nature. I knew that when I was very young, that it was sort of always my sacred place, and you know, nothing really ever lived up to that in my whole life. And luckily, I live in a protected forest area here. Of course, now that Trump has released a lot of the land here, they're fracking in a couple counties around us, so we've had our first 3 earthquakes ever. So that's a something exciting to look forward to. You know, we have a lot of recessed caverns, a lot of caves out here. Very famous ones. One of our recessed caverns, gets more people than Yellowstone National Park to come each year. And we get so many tourists out here, and they come from the cities, and they just completely trash the place here. So I can, you know, it's not quite the beach. And I've heard horror stories about Virginia Beach and Myrtle Beach. But, you know, they destroy our back roads, and it's a real beautiful place here. So it's a shame to see. And, you know, I just think of globalism and things like that when I drive past.
Hey, I'm hearing some weird audio coming through here. It's very strange. I tried to mute people, but it doesn't seem like it even worked. Sorry about that.
Oh, from my end?
It could have been. Is anybody still on the call with me?
I am, but I heard it also, but I don't think it's from me.
No, and I tried to mute all of you, but it didn't seem to work, so I'll have to work on that. But okay, so yeah, how about you, Andrew? Do you have any kind of connection with the natural world? I felt my own very much increase when I stopped eating animal flesh. When I just moved over to a food source that's so much closer to the sunlight, all that energy that is coming from the sunlight that the animals then eat in the form of plants. Well, let's cut out the middleman. Let's go right to the source. It seemed to connect me closer to the source as well. Have you had any of these kinds of experiences yourself in nature?
No. Sorry, I haven't. I just feel more energetic, more stronger. I'm not really a spiritual person or a religious individual. So, like, that's why, like, even when we talk about religion, it's like, I don't know that much about it. And I tend not to talk about it because it's just something that I don't look into. It doesn't interest me because of what the circumstances and situations we're facing. It's like, I feel like I just focus all my time on the number one threat and agenda, and that's the Jewish influence and power. So, like, yeah, I can't really answer that.
I think if people have a spiritual grounding of some sort, and that could just be literal breathing, and you do a lot of that with exercise. If it is just having some kind of foundation from which to push off of, they're much stronger than if they're just kind of flailing around in some kind of nihilistic empty space. If you see what I mean. Let's turn it back. Actually, we've got a new caller here from Ohio. Welcome. Who's this?
Hey, my name is Chris from Cincinnati.
All right, Chris, welcome. Have you called in before?
No, sir. It's pleasure to talk to you, man. I always wanted to touch back on the topic beforehand, Christianity, correct?
Yes. We have just a little bit of time before the next break, so give your thoughts and then we'll respond after.
Sure, man. I was just looking at the fundamental aspects of Christianity when we look into, say, the Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes. These kind of transcend religion themselves and normal human behavior. So I was just looking to hear your insights on what you think about that and how that compares to other religions or just natural human behavior.
Well, I think a lot of those different sayings up there, those pieces of wisdom, were pretty much suicidal, that the meek will inherit the earth. However, I see that has somewhat happened in that most of our best blood, it's died in war. So the meek have in some ways inherited the earth, and now we have a very degenerate population. But I don't think that it contains any real spiritual wisdom that is at all healthy or good. A lot of the things that are universal or transcending tribal boundaries often are constructed to be, I'd say, weapons against all the different nations. If it's universal, it means it could be a virus that is universally affecting all humans rather than just localized to one group. So I think that's the way that we need to look at some of these things that are universalistic. And Catholicism literally is universalism. And you see how race disappears in this gigantic religious empire or a giant pyramid scheme. All right, last half hour coming up. Stay tuned, everyone.
Of immigration developing now across the whole of the European continent based on what you're seeing there in Germany?
This is a very good point, because immigration is the future. You cannot work and live in a globalized world, in the middle of the world, in Europe, without immigration.
So there's a second thing in that black box, an unrelenting stream of immigration. Non-stop. Fewer than 50% of the people in America from then and on will be white European stock. That's not a bad thing. That's a source of our strength.
We'll be right back.
I have no idea what he's saying, but I like it. Okay, we were talking about universalism and the beatitudes, before the break, and the beatitudes for the hive mind, right? That's what they really are. I'd have to say that there are universal truths. You could look at something like mathematics as holding some universal truths. You could think of plenty of other things that are universal. Actually, sun worship, that it should be something that is universal. But actually, in the desert, where you have some of these Semitic religions like Islam, the moon is worshipped because, well, the sun is beating down on you all day long, and you're looking for some shade. And the light of the moon would be a welcome relief from that hot, hot day. Whereas in the frozen north, you have the sun being such a warm blessing upon the cold earth. So there is a different way we see things. Even something as universalistic as the sun, depending upon where we live. So back to what Jesus was saying in his sermon on the moon. I actually think that's the prototype of cultural Marxism. But Chris, anything that you'd like to add before we throw it back to everyone else?
Well, I just wanted to hear your aspect and what you think and what you believe. Like, for instance, if you may subscribe to a specific belief or religion that's not dogmatic, like Catholicism or, you know, just any type of spirituality that is other than your own.
I'm very interested in the pre-Christian European traditions, and to be honest, a lot of the things that Europeans like in Christianity were taken directly from those pre-Christian traditions without all of the sanitism, such as even the hanged or crucified savior. Even the name Jesus seems to be taken from the Celtic Esus, E-S-U-S, who was a carpenter, and Odin hanging from the tree. And actually in the Bible, Jesus is nailed to a tree in a passage. You can look it up. And so there is a lot that's actually within the Christian tradition, such as the Christmas tree, of course, which is forbidden in the Bible. But that's something that comes from our ancestors. So I actually don't think it would be that hard to transition most European people back to, or rather forward to, something much more in line with their genetics, not the genetics of Semites or their slaves. I think that we really would thrive much better if we knew about the gods of our ancestors, heard these stories, felt connected to our roots rather than severed from them as our sacred groves were severed from their roots.
You make some great points, man. And it was good to talk to you.
Thank you. I appreciate the call. Are you going to stay along, or is that it?
Oh, I'm going to roll, but it was really good to talk to you, man. Thanks for your insight.
All right. No problem. All right. That was Chris. And anybody else like to jump in on that?
No.
All right. Late.
I like that we're being positive now, and I think everything you said was correct. I think that, it would be an easy transition for most Christians to make back to their roots, or as you said, forward to something that's closer to what our ancestors felt. And I think that in a natural place, our race would do much better than with the way it is now. And I think it changes. Having a native European faith has more advantages to a white person than they even understand. You get a real spiritual connection. One of the things that turn people off to religion is that they don't get anything out of it. They don't get any connection. But there's no greater connection than to nature and to your blood and your folk. And really, that's what all the movement's about, right? Is about our blood and furthering it. And I think that that's what you get with Native European faith. And it changes things. The Jews have used the media to say terms like white supremacists. And of course, everybody wants to be supreme in their own land. They want to have more of them than the other people. But really what they do is they're blaming us for what they do. Native European faith isn't about ruling the world. It isn't about finding some end where we have to save so many people or murder so many people in order for some hero to come and save us all. It's about that next generation, that next wheel or year. It's about furthering our blood, furthering our folk, making us stronger. It's not about supremacy. And I think once we get that sort of Abrahamic poison or filth out of our systems, you won't see us going clear across the world to bomb people and things like that. It didn't happen for our ancestors until after many, many persuasive crusades, I'll call them. So I think there is definitely something about connecting to our ancestors' faith, becoming, as I said, true whites. And I think as a true white, it makes you stronger. I don't think that, I think that that's more important than a lot of things that we talk about in the movement. I won't mention any of them, but I think that spiritually, we are in a spiritual battle because our ancestors got us here. We didn't get here by accident or because Adam and Eve made love and then their children made love to each other. Our ancestors made this happen, and we have a duty to them and a duty to my children's children. And I think that that has a spiritual connection, regardless if you feel like religion is just everything or nothing, because, your children and the future is everything. That's what we're fighting for. And I just think it makes that much more powerful.
I don't like any religion that is essentially based upon a history that's written in stone, and that's the most important thing. You're always looking backwards to try to find inspiration when we need to be looking forward. We need to be a forward thinking race like we're supposed to be. And the Bible really cements people into a Semitic narrative. And I think we need to stop actually thinking about any of these books that are put out as gospel truth. That's why people view most science today. And look at the science that has been pushed throughout the 20th century. It's so Jewish, like the anthropologist Franz Boas and all these other Jews from the Frankfurt School and their cultural Marxist religion, their anti-white religion. It is something that it has built upon the Semitic influence of, these Abrahamic mind viruses as well. And now we're at this situation right now where you have a very bleak future for the white race. We have been kicked time and again, and we're being stomped on right now. And some of the only reaction that we're seeing is from these reactionary groups, and they all seem to be, if not completely controlled, completely idiotic and Abrahamic in the way that they're reacting. So I don't want to get too down here in the last segment, but we have potentially a giant who is awakening from its slumber. We're trying to revive it as we speak, to get the neurons firing within this great giant and take back control of our nervous system, of our body politic. And I think that in of itself can be viewed as something of a holy mission. When you view your people as a giant organism, you're trying to revive it, bring it back to life. You start to see yourself as being a cell within this larger body. And if you become healthy and active again, then perhaps those cells around you, infected with this cancer, with all the toxicity of this world, well, maybe they too can fight off this disease, and we can revive this once great being that is our macro organism, the race. And I do think of things even further beyond that, such as the whole ecosystem, such as the world. I think that when people are connected to greater powers, they themselves are empowered as long as they retain a locus of control within themselves. I think that is very important. Veganator, you might not want to add anything to this, but we are coming to about the last 15 minutes of the show. So if you want to take it anywhere else beyond these the spiritual metaphysical realms, please, anything else that's been on your radar?
Not really. I'm just pretty much like getting zoned in for a little event that I'm going to do tomorrow, doing as much research as I can. I'll just put it out there. Like I recently did a video on race riots, since one of the last Renegade broadcasts was about race riots. I think it was from Matt or something. And it was just going throughout like all these crazy statistics about like from 1964 to 1974, over 5,000 race riots happened. And just like millions and billions of dollars have been put to fixing, you know, to rebuild, repair the economy of these cities, white flight, holding us back. And it's like, this is the perfect example of the biological weapons of mass destruction. Because even after that period, 1974, the race riots have been going off the same BS excuses, injustice, racism, a cop shooting a criminal. It's the same template. And then I came across this article in Tampa, where I live, and tomorrow they're hosting a big event in a public library, and they said that they're not afraid to talk about what really started this race riot. And they're talking about, you know, blaming whites for it, white racism, white supremacy, when they're really afraid. And just to back up a little bit, nobody is afraid to bash and blame white people for all their problems. That's the main narrative and the whole, you know, agenda. But see, I'm going to go there tomorrow. And it depends on how this documentary is going to go, and I'm going to adjust my game plan. But I'm going to pretty much dress up as a Jew, wear my Star of David, and be like, you know, there's one thing that I noticed that you guys did not mention, and I think you're afraid to call it out. But see, I actually want to brag about this because I am Jewish, and you forgot our Jewish influence and power behind all these influences, such as the human civil rights movement, integration, starting these race riots through MLK, something along those lines. Get them all like confused, because they won't expect that. What they're expecting is some white supremacist to come there and argue and be all angry and upset. But when somebody comes at the angles that I come under, one of God's chosen people, it throws them off. And then, you know, what are they going to say? I'm an anti-Semite, when it's all true, and that I'm playing as if I'm a Jew? You know, like, it's just going to make, they'll be like, you know, and then it's going to have to show their true cards, because these are professors who studied all this. And then they'll always talk about, you know, before integration, the black community was doing real strong, real fine, better, even better than the white community. But then, you know, they always champion the human civil rights movement, integration, MLK is such a great thing. And that, you know what, we need to fix these injustices, the inequalities at the expense of whites. But the white racism that they're talking about when it was segregated was actually a benefit for both communities. It's like, it's mind-boggling, all these scenarios and like...
That's nature. The natural way is that people want to be amongst their own. The bluebirds fly with the bluebirds, as Muhammad Ali, Cassius Clay, said. And that he was against the race mixing. And it's obvious. It's natural. It comes natural to all of us. But they're trying to enforce an anti-nature reality upon us. And they've been pretty successful. They've gotten us out of our nature completely.
Yep, and it's the same. And the thing that I'm going to also do is to say that it's the same agenda within all white European homelands, Europe, Canada, Australia, especially South America. But you cannot court. But for some reason, you've missed the missing link of Jews behind all this, you know, under the guise of human civil rights, because it's not like the white community wanted to be integrated with the black community and the black community did not want to be integrated with the white community. It was forced upon, like everything else, incentivized through feminism, the Great Society program, everything, you know, pushed and promoted, incentivized, thrown the black man out of the house. And, you know, I mean, there's so many ways to go at this. And I cover this on my videos, and I don't want to beat this, you know, aspect to a horse, but like, that's what I'm focusing on right now.
Pointing out, hey, listen, the black community didn't want this. The white community didn't want this. Who do you think got in there and made sure you guys got integrated and that things got improved?
Yep. That's
it's the greatest ally right here. Look at the NAACP. Who was running that?
Yep.
Like, you need to thank us. You haven't thanked us for doing what you guys didn't have the courage to do and fulfilling the divine plan of mixing the races together and destroying the nations. I mean, and liberating the nations.
Yeah. And fixing the injustices and inequalities.
Allah, look it up. All right, we have a new caller coming in here. Yes, Nick from Virginia. You back?
Yeah, I just had one last thing to say. I guess here in Virginia Beach, some woman in a blonde wig and a white pant going around trying to snatch people's children. And it's like a story going around, like, locally. It's not on the news, but on Facebook and stuff, people talking about it. This lady, apparently some woman in a blonde wig, walked up in her yard while her kids were playing and tried to snatch her. So
just, there's so many children going missing.
Are you sure it's not a blonde weave? Like, you know, a black person wearing a blonde weave.
Yeah, that stuff. This is one of the things that really gets me so pissed off. Looking at all of the missing children around the DC area and how, you know, nobody really wants to do anything about these people in the highest offices of the land raping children. It's actually kind of just a matter of course. It's to be expected that both the candidates in the election flew on the Lolita Express owned by Jewish child sex slaver Jeffrey Epstein. Oh, what are you, an anti-Semite? It says in the Talmud, hey, you can even take a child as young as three. Come on, well, get Abrahamic with it. You know, Muhammad married Aisha at the age of six. Copulated with her at the age of nine. So, I mean, it's no big deal. I listened to a Katy Perry song. It's no big deal. Just don't worry about it. You know, these people like Dennis Hastert being the highest ranking person in Congress, you know, who is a child rapist. Hey. You know, no, we shouldn't go down there with pitchforks and torches. Let's make some jokes and hope that they, you know, these child rapists actually MAGA with us.
Yeah, and then I just saw there's that story, that little 9-year-old drag king boy, the little boy who's all the rage and the drag. And it's like, dude, when I was nine, I rode my bike and, like, played outside. Like, you know, like, it's just so, like, just disgusting. Like, when I was a little kid, I just wanted to play with toys. Like, I didn't know anything about sex and stuff. Like, it's
you
so
might have
ridiculous.
Known some tomboys. Did you know some tomboys when you were growing up?
Yeah.
Yeah, girls want to be like
now
boys.
They would give them some steroids, be like, oh, you like hanging out with the boys here, some estrogen blockers and this and that. It's so ridiculous.
One of my really good friends, when I lived in Pennsylvania, she was a tomboy. The first day I met her, I thought it was another boy. You know, I thought it was actually Michael instead of Michelle. Funny enough, you know, dealing with the first lady boy. But you know, later on, years later, she had turned into a beautiful girl, a beautiful woman eventually. But this used to be a tomboy who I thought was legitimately a boy. And then guess what? They go through puberty. And this their natural sex hormones kick in. But we want to be anti-nature. We want to let children develop naturally. We want to get in there with some intervention early on, whether it's the vaccines or whether it's some programming with some sex ed and some media convincing these children that the best, most heroic thing you can do is be like Caitlyn Jenner and switch your sex. Be fluid. It's infuriating. It's infuriating to see the criticism of this essentially being taboo, verboten. Think about it. If you go out and oppose this sickness right now, it could be used to get you fired from your job. This is like the ultimate sin, going against the rainbow in America. That's how.
Male in my fucking workplace. I work in a little mail room, and one of our, sure enough, we got a training, you know, we got to, you know, watch how we talk. Can't, you know, be like, hey, dude, just don't watch what you say around the training.
Yep. It's mind-boggling. Seeing these people in this society put up with, tolerate this level of bullshit. They've been able to normalize such degeneracy in such a short period of time and have people just kind of tacitly go along with it. We're the walking dead. That's literally the situation.
Chemtrails, everything. The chemtrails are so bad here. Like, oh my God, it's the sky, like first thing in the morning, blue sky, by 10 o'clock, X's all across the whole sky. It's crazy.
That's the way they looked when I was a child. I remember always looking up and seeing crisscrosses across the sky. You know, of course I didn't, but they've pretty much put that in old movies now. It's thick. Let's start wrapping it up here for the night. But before we do that, actually, it looks like we have John Smith. Maybe he's just getting ready to do some music. But John, if you wanted to comment on anything real quick, please jump on.
Hey.
Okay, John, welcome.
Good show tonight. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Veganator, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
Hey, good, man. I was just in Tampa, but I didn't really know about you. I hope to get to meet you next time I'm down that way.
Okay, yeah, anytime. Just Kyle knows my contact, and you know, go from there. Or Twitter, you know, my Twitter, the Veganator, hit me up there.
You're all over the place. You're listing all these social media sites, and you know, I'm thinking to myself, I'm just like, Jesus, it's too much, man. How do you keep up with it all? You know,
it's actually not. Well, I don't put too much activism on Twitter. I just put most of my work on YouTube, and then like you have a feature on YouTube after the video's over. You just link all the accounts and you just press a button, share. That's what I do. But like the only thing that I really put a lot of time into is Facebook, because my real Facebook got showed. So I got a fake Facebook where I just add people. And like I edited my license to put a different name so that it's verified. It's not going to get shut down, because I used to have a fake account with a fake name, and then they ask, you know, your ID. So I fake the name and it's a different name. But I add different people, random people, and just start, you know, I share my videos on my Facebook, and people share the videos on Facebook, contact me. Like I got people in Australia, chatting with me, start movements there. They want to do hangouts with me and stuff, and you know, it's, you just got to spread your message as to many platforms as possible. Like I was debating on getting onto like BitChute and all these other ones, Vimeo, but I believe, in my opinion, for right now, YouTube is still the major dominating platform, so I just stick with that. But yeah, like I try to branch out as much as possible, network, and go from there.
All right, well, good talk to you, man.
Hey, what kind of mic you use, man? You're really clear.
This would be the Shure SM57. It's $99 would be the only microphone you'll ever need.
Yeah, it's really clear. Sure.
I'm using the one that Level 5 Toaster actually sent me. Shout out to him. We have just a few minutes left. We'll go back to Leafkin briefly for his final thoughts here.
Well, I'm really glad I called into this show. It was a really good conversation, and I'm glad to see that everybody is doing something instead of sitting on their hands. And, you know, even the lighter parts where we talk about nature and things, I think that's important. I would have one suggestion. I would like to see Firestarter Media really take to YouTube a bit more. I know that you guys have been showing there enough, but it would be really funny to see Sinead censor herself on purpose and tell people, if you want to see what I, you know, what I said, you know, what I can't say here, link to Renegade Vids. And I think that just her spirit and how hilarious she is when she rants, if she could keep it clean enough, it would get a whole lot of people to go to Renegade Vids from YouTube. It's such a terrific source to pull people from. I think the people that actually post shows and or, you know, do 10-minute videos here and there, those people are very brave, and they have to, you know, limit what they say and kind of, you know, maneuver around things to stay on there. And I think that's cool. You have the freedom here to say what you want, Kyle, and I think that it's a great outlet for everybody. And I had a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks, Leafkin.
Thanks for having me.
I want to thank Nick in Virginia Beach and Andrew. Quick final thoughts for you.
Yeah. I told Sinead when I was talking to her when we were meeting up, I was like, you got to get back on the YouTube, because I love her attitude and the way she presents her message and her videos. It's so hilarious because you don't expect seeing that from a woman. And like, your wife is awesome at making videos, and it is like, it will attract a large crowd. Like what Leafkin was saying, you know, if you want to see this special unedited copy or video, go to Renegade, where it could be just totally uncensored and all that stuff. So that'd be a good idea.
All right. Well, I will tell her about that. Hopefully she listens to this show. Well, hey, I want to thank all of you for participating. That was a good discussion. I want to thank everybody for listening and for supporting the network. Stay tuned. Much more to come. Side of World War II. They don't want us to know the real history of what happened over 70 years ago, seeing through the eyes of the German victims. The horror of the terror bombing, the mass rape of millions of women and children, the torture and murder of civilians, the death camps for surrendered soldiers, the ethnic cleansing of whole countries, and the planned extermination of the entirety of the German people. After watching Hellstorm, you'll never see the good war and the good guys in the same light ever again. Watch for free and get DVDs at hellstormdocumentary.com.
Set upon myself as the light fades, I set into myself. So moments I'm caught by the deceit of desire, shadows for myself from love.